From KQED Public Radio in San Francisco, I'm Scott Schaefer in today for Mina Kim. As fires blaze throughout the state and the cost of living skyrockets, some are wondering if California is becoming unlivable. One in seven homes in the state are at high risk for wildfire. 130,000 Californians are homeless, and housing prices continue to rise. We'll discuss the future of California in the face of climate change and income inequality, and we want to hear from you. Has the California dream become the California nightmare? And then later in the hour, we'll talk sports with San Francisco Chronicle columnist Bruce Jenkins, the struggling Warriors, the undefeated 49ers, and more. All that coming up on Forum right after the news. Welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer in today for Mina Kim. And later in the hour, we're going to talk sports, the troubled Golden State Warriors and the very untroubled San Francisco 49ers who won their eighth straight game last night. San Francisco sports columnist Bruce Jenkins will join us. But we begin with our Golden State. And let's face it, our gold is a little bit tarnished these days with yet another year of wildfires compounded by power outages, not to mention the incredibly high cost of living and the lack of affordable housing. Those are just some of the problems facing California. The air quality or the quality of life generally is the subject of a number of articles in national publications this week, including one in The Atlantic titled California is Becoming Unlivable, and its author Annie Lowry joins us now. Good morning. And while we're finding Annie, let me give out the phone number. It's 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. We'd love to hear from you. This is what we call a talker in the business. People love to talk about this kind of subject. Is California unlivable? Have you reached your point where you're thinking, maybe I'm going to leave, or maybe you already packed your bags and have left? Give us a call. We'd love to hear from you and your thoughts about this question of California's quality of life. 866-733-6786. And feel free to also send your comments to us on Twitter or Facebook. We're at KQED Forum. And you can always email us as well, forum@kqed.org. And let me say good morning to Annie Lowry. Welcome.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, you know, I know you don't write the headlines. That's the first thing reporters will always tell you. But
true.
That's true. But, you know, the title, this one isn't even a question. It's a statement, you know, that California is becoming unlivable. You know, what do you think? Is it what makes you say that? And, you know, do you live here, first of all?
I do. So, you know, I live here, you live here, a lot of these listeners live here. So, yes, I did not write the title. And the point that the piece was trying to make was that if there are two really urgent crises facing California, crises that are kind of life and death crises in many cases, two of the most urgent are the wildfire crisis and how that's played out after of the last couple of years, and the housing crisis. And I think that this will be unsurprising to anybody who lives in Los Angeles or the Bay Area or many other places in California. But there's actually some linkages between these two. And I don't want to overstate it because these are really complicated, multi-causal issues. But you have had restrictions on building in urban centers that have led to additional sprawl, that have put more people in the wildland-urban interface, which has left them more vulnerable to the natural wildfires that the state has and its land is adapted to, and that's scary. And I think that the state is, and a lot of people are facing these questions of, you know, can I afford to live here? And is it safe to live here? You know, I think that the question is how to have better policies to adapt. You know, I certainly don't think that all 40 million of us are packing our bags and heading, you know, to the middle of the country or the East Coast. But they're really, really pressing and urgent and really extraordinarily acute.
Well, and as you write in the piece, and I'm quoting here, California's housing crisis has exacerbated its wildfire crisis, and its wildfire crisis has exacerbated its housing crisis, and that vicious cycle is nowhere near ending. Was there, for you in writing this piece, was there, you know, a tipping point? Was there a moment? Is this something you've been thinking about just as a resident for a long time? And is it just this latest, not just, but is this latest, you know, round of power outages and the prospect of that going on sort of indefinitely? You know, what was it that where you said, you know, I'm going to write this column? this article?
Yeah. You know, I think that PG&E coming forward and saying, you know, we're going to be doing these prophylactic power outages. They're what we have to do to keep Californians safe. But the fact that that is going to go on indefinitely, given the cost of putting the lines underground and given that, you know, we're in a state that's getting hotter and drier, and where wildfire season is not looking like it's going to get any shorter and milder in our lifetimes. And so, you know, facing the prospect of those kind of consistent power outages and all of us already paying higher utilities than almost any place else in the country, that was a little bit of what kind of kicked it off. And, you know, my husband grew up here, but I didn't. And I grew up in New England, where you have a lot of extreme weather events, right? You have ice storms, you have hurricanes, you have blizzards. But they're kind of menacing in a different way than wildfires are, where, you know, it's just this constant threat, right? This sort of feeling that they could come up suddenly anywhere with very little warning, which is really different to how storms function out on the East Coast, where, you know, you at least have a couple days notice. And that's not to say that things are worse out here than there. It's just that they're menacing in a really different fashion. And you know, I have a really little kid. And so I think going through this wildfire season, sitting in the dark in your house, kind of wondering, well, okay, are we ready to get out at a moment's notice, was what sort of kicked it off. And, you know, that doesn't make the state unlivable for me, but I know that there are how many hundreds of thousands of millions of us that live with that thought process going on in the back of our head all the time, right? Do we know how to get out of here?
Yeah.
Are we ready to go at a moment's notice?
Can I just ask which county you live in?
Yeah, so I live in Oakland, so up kind of in the hilly part of Oakland. So we were affected by the PG&E, the public safety shutoff this time.
Yeah, and of course there was the terrible Oakland Hills fire in 1991. I don't know if you were around for that.
Of course.
Yeah, yeah.
I was not, but, you know, it's so prevalent for how many people, you know, for so many people that live here and obviously in many other parts of the state.
Yeah. Well, of course, you know, and I'm sure you've heard this in response to your article, but, you know, you mentioned the storms in New England, but, you know, there's hurricanes, there's tornadoes, there's people building and living in floodplains. We, of course, live in earthquake country here. So, I mean, to what are you saying that, yeah, every sort of a lot of places have those kinds of risks, but what makes it untenable here is the public policy that is making it worse or making it harder to solve?
Yeah, I actually think that we as a country, especially if you live on the coast or in wildfire country, although frankly, you know, if you're living in Tornado Alley also, or, you know, my brother lives up in Minneapolis, I think actually as a country, we're having this kind of slow going but ongoing conversation about how we're going to adapt to a more extreme climate. And California has its version of that conversation, but it's happening everywhere. I mean, you know, if you know somebody who lives in Miami, they're having that conversation. If you know anybody who lives on the Gulf Coast, obviously that's really prevalent. I think that especially if you didn't grow up with it, maybe wildfires are kind of frightening in this way that you feel like they come without warning. And that's the kind of scary part was all that I meant in terms of that. But no, I mean, nationally, we're absolutely going through this. And, you know, I was around when Superstorm Sandy hit New York, right? And that started a whole conversation about, well, what's going to happen if we're going to have to deal with catastrophic flooding in, you know, one of the densest cities that we have. Here, I think that there are a few things that make California unique. California's housing crisis is unusually acute. There are few places in the United States that are as acute as it is here. Again, I think that you are actually in most urban centers having a kind of cost of living crisis, but it's particularly bad here. And so where I think that you get to these kind of questions of sort of unlivability, should people be living here? Is it tenable to be living here in California? Comes from folks who have sort of moved to the periphery to areas that we might think of as sprawl or exurban or in this wildlife urban interface. Where they've had to move because the cost of living can be so high elsewhere. And I think folks who are living in Paradise obviously are just a really horrific example of this happening, but then becoming somewhat more vulnerable to climate catastrophe as well.
Yeah.
And there's obviously a really heavy interplay of this, given how much of the state, it's not just fires, right? It is, of course, the prevalent threat of earthquakes. It's also mudslides. It's also incursion from water and flooding.
And drought.
So, yeah, absolutely, and drought. And so it just seems like you have unusually intense or acute versions of things that are happening in a lot of places that just happen to be happening here.
Talking with Annie Lowry, staff writer for The Atlantic. And as I mentioned, we do want to bring our callers in. I'm going to do that right now. First, let me just give out the phone number again, 866-733-6786. And we're going to start with Michael in Sonoma. Welcome.
Hey, thank you. Your guest comments really resonate with me because I'm a California native, but my wife is from New England, and she freaked out when we experienced our first earthquake in Napa. I was in San Francisco during the 89 quake, and then in 2017, we evacuated twice from Sonoma. So these things are really both real and existential threats, but I would suggest that living in other parts of the country, I just came back from a trip to the Midwest, and the progressivism and the political climate here, I think, is something that would be very difficult to leave, because when you go to other parts of the country and you're surrounded by people who have very different political beliefs, very conservative beliefs, it would be extremely difficult to live there despite the low prices. And clearly, needless to say, there are natural threats anywhere in the country. I mean, tornadoes do kill a lot of people.
Yeah. Well, and also, and Annie, you can weigh in on this as well. I mean, a lot of times what makes California so desirable is is related to the things that make it so dangerous. I mean, the deserts, the coast, the beautiful forests and the redwoods and all these other things that we love about California are also partly, you know, very much related to the risks of living here, too. So, you know, yeah, you could live in, not to pick on Iowa or Kansas, you know, but a state that's really flat and doesn't have earthquakes and doesn't have, you know, these other risks. But, you know, maybe there is, yeah, that political environment that Michael's talking about. So it's, I mean, any place you go, right, there's going to be a combination of things that are going to make it, you know, both risky, desirable, and so on.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that Michael kind of alluded to there and that I think is very true about California, given that you have pretty unified government here, in many cases from top to bottom all the way down to the local level.
By unified, you mean Democrat.
Yeah, unified democratic government. There's enormous will to tackle these challenges. And I think that, you know, in terms of the housing crisis, obviously SB 50 didn't pass, but there's been an extraordinary amount of legislation to start dealing with this. There's a whole really intense conversation that places are having about, you know, balancing gentrification and infill building and making sure that rents come down and, you know, all of that. As well as I think that there's a really vibrant ongoing conversation about how to make communities safer. California already has really extraordinarily high building standards in terms of fire safety. And, you know, I think that the conversation in terms of land planning, right, like where should people be is sort of in its more nascent stages, but it's certainly happening, including at the state level. And so, you know, if any state is going to be tackling this, with really aggressive public policy, I think it's California.
Although you know, the Republicans would say, no, you've got it exactly wrong. It's the problems are being created by the Democratic policies on the environment and requiring utilities to have renewable energy goals and all these things that are, you know, taking them away from, you know, things like maintaining their power lines, which, you know, a lot of people would say is a false choice. But nonetheless, California is very much in the crosshairs of Donald Trump right now.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think it was so fascinating when Trump came here, when he tried to elevate the urban homelessness issue in California to be kind of a national issue. It's interesting seeing all of that pushback, though, right? You know, how dare you come in here and suggest that you know better than the people who have been working on this problem really intensely, and, you know, blame homeless folks for their own situation. That was really interesting too. And yeah, I mean, we could talk all day about how to apportion and assign blame between PG&E and other utilities, and whether, you know, the privatization was the issue, whether they should be taken public. So I agree that, yeah, certainly the political answers are not easy on any of this.
Yeah. All right, Michael, thanks so much for the call. I'm going to give out the number again, 866-733-6786. And let's bring in Josh Golke. He is deputy opinion editor for the San Francisco Chronicle. Josh, you've been listening to this conversation. What are your thoughts about this? I mean, we here in California have heard this, you know, oh, it's all over for California every 10 years ago or so. I remember in 2010, it was the big California crack-up book and, you know, Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, is the state even governable and so on. You know, what are your thoughts?
Hi, Scott. Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's hard not to notice that there's a dedicated constituency for beating up on California and making sort of big claims about it failing in various ways. And part of that is maybe East Coast-based publications full of journalists who want to reassure themselves about not living here.
Although some of them do live here. I mean, obviously Annie lives here.
Of course, present company excluded. But I do think that's why you tend to see these sort of overblown headlines about, you know, why would anyone want to live in California? California's a hobo paradise and California's over as we know it, that sort of thing. And I, as the caller brought up, you know, there's also this political dimension to it where there's the constituency also includes conservatives who want to blame all these problems on liberal politicians and their failures.
Well, and of course, the Chronicle and KQED and, you know, any publication that's covering the news is doing a lot of reporting on the cost or, you know, of living here, the homelessness problem, open drug dealing and drug use in San Francisco. I mean, that all becomes fodder for the politicians and also for the national media, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, I think I think everybody could do a little better at introducing some context in terms of these fires, for example, while they are terrible and tragic and causing all kinds of pain for a lot of people, they're not even close to the most destructive or deadly or largest fires that the state has seen in the past couple of years or ever. And I do think that you know, the focus on the housing problem is really appropriate and correct, and that is a really particular California problem. I wish we could translate some of the overblown, you know, panic over every catastrophe to some more serious policy making on housing, which really is intimately related to a lot of these problems, including the wildfires, as Annie's piece pointed out.
Absolutely. All right, Josh Golke from the San Francisco Chronicle, thanks so much for giving us a little perspective on that. Appreciate that. And, of course,
sure.
Annie Lowry, a lot of these problems, too, are driven by the fact that California is popular. I mean, people do want to live here. You know, the population growth has slowed down a bit, but we're, you know, right about 40 million people right now. And that exacerbates all of this. And some of that, you could say, certainly is driven by the economy doing so well. And here in San Francisco and the Bay Area, the tech economy has really driven the population has grown, but the demand for housing has grown, but the supply of housing has not. So it's all very interconnected.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that the point about how it gets translated for national media is a really good one. So for a long time, I lived in Washington, D.C. I love D.C. really deeply. And I was a reporter at The New York Times in the Washington Bureau for a long time. And every once in a while, The New York Times would run a story about, like, with, like, just, like, open-jawed amazement that there was, like, food to eat in D.C., right? And everybody in the Bureau would be, like, rolling
their eyes. They say that about, you know, about Brooklyn.
Yeah, no, exactly. Like, oh my gosh, they have like a French bistro. And it's like, yep, you know, there's hundreds of thousands of us. We live here and we eat in restaurants too. And I think that you definitely get some of that. I'm sure it's really frustrating for folks who work at the Chronicle, who obviously cover this stuff with just enormous integrity and intensity, the sense of like folks coming in and being like, oh gosh, well, there's fires here. And that means it's unlivable. It's a fire-adapted place. It's a place that's always had fires. And, you know, as Josh pointed out, the fires were, in fact, much worse a couple of years ago. And so, you know, and I think that what struck me as being a little bit weird about that is the flip side of it, is that in some ways it still feels undercovered, right? It still feels like there isn't the sort of national media attention that you would expect, given that, yeah, there's 40 million folks here, one of the most arguably the most vibrant economy and economic centers in the whole country. I think you're right? Like, of course people want to live in California. It's extraordinarily still, I think, that the quality of life, depending on where you are, is really great, even if you do have this extraordinary cost of living crisis. And you have these, you know, unbelievably vibrant tech and cultural centers. State economy is doing really well. And then you have these really unique challenges that the state is facing. And one thing that I think is interesting, right, like if it were more affordable to live here, if there were much more buildings that more people could be here, I think the state would actually be much bigger. That really famous Enrico Moretti paper that suggests that California's economy would be like $1 trillion bigger if it didn't have such restrictive zoning. All of these things, yeah, I think are intention.
Very much. All right, let's get back to the phones. And Kevin in Richmond, welcome. Point Richmond, I should say.
Hi. Thanks for taking a call. It's interesting listening to the conversation talking about natural disasters and fires and how wonderful California is. I, for the first time in 45 years of having lived here, am really, I'm not stuck here because I don't have any time to do any of the things that I love to do. You know, it's just too hard to make a living. And
what do you do?
I'm a woodworker. I'm self-employed and run all aspects of the business. And so it's very hard to do it here. Luckily, there are things related to the fires right now that are providing opportunities for urban and salvage lumber to be used instead of things like ipé and other sorts of tropical hardwoods.
Ipé is a kind of wood.
Ipé is a type of wood that is used for decking, and it is shipped from places like Brazil. But right now, I have the opportunity to sell material that's from these fires that's just as good.
Yeah, so a little bit of an upside there.
So that's the upside, but at the same time, like, it is such a struggle to live in the Bay Area right now. I just want time to be able to do things.
Yeah, well, I appreciate that. Kevin, we're coming up to a break. We're coming up to a break, so I'm sorry I have to let you go. But, you know, certainly for people who do the kind of work you do, artists, people who work with their hands, it is extremely difficult, certainly a lot harder to afford to live here than it was when I came here about 40 years ago. So I hope you can hang on and stick around, because it's obviously part of what makes the Bay Area so interesting and desirable to live in, is all that creativity. All right, we're going to take a short break, and we're going to talk a little bit more about this topic for 10 minutes or so after the break. Again, the number to call, 866-733-6786, 866-733-6786. Give us your thoughts about California and whether you're thinking of leaving. And welcome back to Forum. Scott Schaefer here today for Mina Kim. And for a few minutes longer, we're going to be talking about the quality of life in California, whether it has really become untenable to live here. We're talking with Annie Lowry, a staff writer with The Atlantic. Her piece that she's recently written is titled California is Becoming Unlivable. She's not the only one talking about that and writing about it. If you'd like to join the conversation, it's 866-733-6786. Here are some comments from some of our listeners. Rachel tweets, I left San Francisco in 2000 and used to think about moving back to a cheaper part of California, but the latest environmental crises and PG&E debacles have me thinking I'll just stay on the East Coast. Jonathan writes, plenty of people will continue to do what California has always done, innovate and create solutions. This is home, and for many people, it always will be. Did New Orleans rebuild after Katrina? Of course it did, because it was worth rebuilding. California is the same way. And Janae tweets, I'll eventually leave, and the past couple weeks made me feel even more certain about that. It's also become clear that there's no way my parents can stay here as they age. My mom spent 5 nights without her sleep apnea machine, which she uses so she doesn't stop breathing. So obviously a lot of folks were in distress, older folks, disabled people, and others during those power problems that we were experiencing here in California. All right, let's go back to the phones now. And Robert in Los Altos, welcome.
So I've got maybe a housing suggestion that also might piggyback with some of the comments about, you know, is moving outside of California an option given how unprogressive a lot of the rest of the country is? So here's the deal. Here's what I think we do. Given how, you know, the Googles and the Facebooks and these, you know, huge tech companies are part, you know, maybe for good reason, but part of the cause of the housing problem, we get those guys to say, look, we are going to start growing more rapidly in states outside of California. And have them admit, look, they are a political force, whether they like it or not. I mean, particularly Facebook, who you could argue in no small part led to the election of our current idiot president. So they say, look, we're going to help with the housing problem, and we are going to pay, kind of like, you know, a Peace Corps model, pay more money to people from California to populate those offices and bring a progressive mindset to the states and reduce our housing issue and help grow a more progressive mindset throughout the country.
Yeah. Well, I think, Robert, Annie, jump in if you'd like, but certainly that kind of migration has been happening for a long time. I mean, you see many Californians, not just techies, but others moving to Nevada and Arizona, Colorado, even, you know, further east than that. And you do see some of the politics in those places and places in California, like the Central Valley, changing, Orange County as well, because people are migrating from places like Los Angeles and San Francisco, which are just so completely unaffordable. And of course, Annie, tech companies would say, hey, you know, we are spending money on housing here in the Bay Area. Certainly some of the big companies are, like Facebook and Google, but it's just clearly the demand outstrips the need.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that there's kind of two pieces to think about here. So one is there something special about the Bay Area in terms of the tech economy, right? You know, if a city like Boulder or like Austin did a ton more building, would they draw things away from the Bay Area and would that be qualitatively different? And I think the answer is yes. Right? It's really important that you have this tech ecosystem that's so vibrant here, and that the fact that all of these minds and businesses are close to each other is part of what makes it so special. And then there's this kind of secondary issue of, right, like, you know, within that, how much housing would you need to continue to sustain that going forward? And how much is the housing crisis actually sort of holding back on the ability of innovators to innovate here just because the cost of living is so high? And there, I mean, we have so many estimates and numbers of this, but the shortages run into the millions, right? And I think that there comes all sorts of other problems when you talk about having more people live in a dense area, right, particularly having to do with things like school quality, transportation, you know, the utility infrastructure. But I think it would be better for tech if there were more people here and they were paying way less in rent or in mortgage. And I just think that that's unassailably true. You know, even if you're somebody who's spending, you know, some crazy amount, like $10,000 a month on an apartment, and you can afford that because, you know, you're a VC, right? It would still be better for you to be paying way less than that, let alone all of the school teachers, folks who are working in food service, people who are working in childcare, who are finding it functionally impossible to live in many communities, even if they'd like to.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that is the long-term problem that is so unsustainable, is if you can't get teachers and service workers. I mean, we've got, you know, obviously you have schools, but also an economy so driven, you know, by the service industry, the entertainment industry, tourism, and so on. I'm not sure, you know, where the resolution for that is going to come. All right, a couple more minutes left, and let's bring Joy in from San Francisco. Welcome.
Hi. I just wanted to add some perspective to the narrative that's going on right now. I feel like there's a lot of hysteria and sensationalism going on in the media right now about the fires. You know, it's just not something that happens every year on the regular for many, many, many years in the way that, say, tornadoes or flooding or hurricanes or any number of ice storms or things that happen all over the country that are just sort of normal, that, you know, are also hard and also displace people and also take away housing and also make things difficult. And people rebuild and over in places that, to me, don't seem like sustainable places to live. But, you know, that's happening. And I feel like there's just this drive to kind of take California down a peg. You know, everybody likes seeing the golden child get a little slap.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. I think that's part of what is happening a bit with the fire coverage. I mean, like somebody said earlier, the fires this year are so much better than last year, the year before. You know, some of that's weather, but some of that is preparation. Some of that is CAL FIRE and government working together,
yeah,
making sure that things are really being taken care of.
Yeah, and thanks for that, Joy. And, you know, Annie, of course, you know, a lot of these issues, they are, as we said at the beginning, the housing problem, the environmental regulations that make it hard to build, the popularity, the inherent dangers in California from natural disasters. I mean, they're all true. It's not really an either or kind of a situation. And you're getting some pushback from some of the folks here about the LA Times also had a piece this morning, Steve Lopez, about, hating on California. But these are legitimate issues. But I think it's also true that there is sort of a desire sometimes to knock California because we are, you know, on the coast and there's so much natural beauty here and all these things. So it's a complicated stew of things, I guess we can agree.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that it's hard because, yes, on the one hand, to draw one point out, yeah, I think that we'll know more about this in the coming weeks and months. But yeah, CAL FIRE has done an extraordinary job in a particularly bad weather pattern to make sure that this wasn't worse. I think that that's absolutely unequivocally true. And though it does seem that PG&E infrastructure was the cause of some of these fires, right? Like, how much worse would it have been had they not been turning people's power off? You know, we don't know.
Right.
And I think that there is just this trauma that comes with having lived through these fires. You know, we talked about the 91 fire in Oakland and Berkeley Hills, that just stays with people. I think that the memory, the really present memory of how bad the Sonoma fires were, how bad the Camp Fire was, is part of what's happening here, the Tubbs Fire. And, you know, and I do, it's hard too, because it's existential, right? It's life or death for people. And so I don't know, like, I certainly don't feel like, I'm sure that there is some element of people just, trying to take California down a peg, but it's an existential problem, right?
Yeah.
It's an existential problem that millions of people negotiate year after year after year. So that kind of question of the sort of media question of, well, like, is there enough coverage or too much or not enough? Is it the right tenor? You know, it does.
Yeah. Well,
does,
and in fairness, these are the same questions that the legislature is grappling with and has been for years.
Yeah.
You know, so it's not just a media fabrication. All right, Annie Lowry, staff writer with The Atlantic. Thank you so much for starting this conversation or contributing to it, and thanks for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.